Oh, they do not coagulate. So they, if they would come together, they would probably stick together, and then you have large undefined objects. Yeah, this is prevented either by this polymer coating, and these polymers, there's a kind of force that hinders the thing to come really together, or by charge. Yeah, yeah, they will not. So they stay, they're really stable. Okay, let me start with the thermal instability of a single fluid, which is known stuff. We heat, this is a slab of fluid. We heat it from the below. There's a gravity field. Of course, what's happening is first you have just heat conduction from down to up, but due to the thermal expansion, the positive thermal expansion, the liquid is less dense at the bottom and more dense at the top, and this is unstable in this gravitational field. So we can define this Rayleigh number. Here we have this thermal expansion that helps to get this instability. Beta is the temperature gradient. The larger the gradient, the easier you have this instability. Of course, this is a gravitational constant. Okay, if that would be larger, you would have easier instability. In the denominator are the effects that somehow are counterproductive for this instability. The viscosity, if the system is viscous, you need a higher temperature gradient to get the instability. Also, this is the heat conduction. If the system has a high heat conduction, the heat conduction is very effective, and you don't have to switch to convection for the dissipation of the energy put into the system. So, okay, so some additional geometric factors, then this Rayleigh number is it's a dimensionless quantity, and if it exceeds some critical value, you have convection, pattern formation, and all that stuff. Now, what's different if you have a binary fluid? In a binary fluid, you have two conserved masses, but still only one macroscopic velocity. So Navier-Stokes equation is almost the same. But you have an equation for this concentration. You have a concentration current, either due to concentration gradients, that's the diffusion, or to thermal gradients, then is thermal diffusion or Soré effect. Next, you have this solute expansion. That means you have changes in the density of your system, not only due to the temperature changes, but also to concentration changes, especially if the two constituents of your binary mixtures have different masses. And from these new objects, you can construct two relevant new dimensionless quantities. One is the Lewis number, which gives you the ratio of diffusion to heat conduction, and the separation ratio, which is the ratio of this solute expansion to this usual volume expansion, and Soré to diffusion coefficient.
So that neglects the Dufour effect?
Yeah, Dufour effect is always neglected.
You're not working with gases?
No, Dufour is, as usual, neglected, yes. Now, the point is here for these ferrofluids, it turns out that the Lewis number is very, very small. That the reason is these magnetic particles are rather heavy, so their diffusion is very small. So usually, if this happens, people tend to say, okay, then we can forget about this binary mixture nature of the thing. We just describe it as a one-fluid thing. And that has usually been done, and I will show that this is a little bit misleading. The point is, the reason is this separation ratio is very large in these ferrofluids. Okay, it can be negative, but I only want to talk about positive separation ratios here. They can be 30 to 100, which is quite large. Yeah, they are known. They are known, yes.
Sorry, what are the small views?
Uh, These are alphas. These are the alphas here from the change in volume. Sorry.
So these are particles are very small from the sort of magnetic point of view, but very large compared to.
They are magnetite particles. That means they are specific. They are much heavier, specifically, than the water.
You're considering.
Mm-hmm. And they are much larger, the 10 nanometers compared to water.
So you're considering now the binary fluid made up of the solvent on the one hand and these particles.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
So the particles, 10 nanometers, does that include the polymer brush?
Okay, this is another 2 nanometers. So yeah, but that's not so much. Yeah, and from the mass, it's not
I mean, it's not clear that you can treat them like a fluid.
No. This has its limitation. That's a kind of model. And I'm sure it really depends on what you are looking at, whether this model is useful or not. It's clear. On the microscopic scale, okay, these are 10 nanometers.
No, but they have magnetic forces. I mean,
Have
hydrogen. Nobody has.
That's a granular medium.
Well, it's not exactly granular because it's. What, apart from all of this instability, what evidence is there that this can be considered a flugel? You know, Navier-Stokes flugel.
Yeah. Okay.
Has that ever been, because there are magnetic forces and all kinds of things, Is that something that there is some?
I don't really know how you can really prove this directly.
You're
worried
about the dipole-dipole forces between magnetic particles?
Yes, but okay. But if you cross-grain it, okay, the cross-graining is a little bit. On a larger scale than what you would do for water, but okay, if you do this on a 100 nanometer scale, I don't see really a problem. But
the
concentration is very, very small. They are below 1%, even less. So it's
do they interrupt with you?
Almost not.
So right now, so you're treating this as two fluids.
Yes.
And the idea is that they're 20 fluids in the sense that the separation ratio is gigantic.
Yeah, yeah. And this is about the second part is they are susceptible to magnetic fields. So you can
come in later. But they don't interact.
Yeah.
And then the what concentration of magnetic particles do I mean, how black does this thing have to be to actually see the effect? And what concentrations are we working in? I mean, would it be, I know that these things can actually get quite transparent once you put in less and less and less magnetic particles.
Okay.
You can actually look through them.
So usually the people are using the commercial products, which are, I think it's in the range of one, and they are dark.
But of course, here we could also deal with local.
Okay, you.
So okay, your point is that if you want to treat something with a two-fluid model, you should have some, two fluids. You should have some idea of what the pure fluids are like, and
I mean, this is, you know, a Newtonian fluid. We
yes.
have no idea if it's
yes.
Newtonian.
No, it's not obvious. So I cannot prove it. So
no, but there might be.
Do you see?
Experimental tests that are not of the far from equilibrium instability.
Okay, maybe
just the flow properties.
Okay,
like,
maybe.
Right. Mm. But anyway,
okay.
None of that.
Yeah, yeah. No. I just want to show that in that case, binary mixture description is fine. Okay. These are the usual the equations for which one uses to describe thermal instability in a binary mixture. In Businesque approximation, you see this is we have incompressibility. This is a Navier-Stokes equation. This is a buoyancy force. Now, due to temperature and concentration, you see here is the separation ratio. This is heat diffusion. This is the diffusion. And this is a story. You see it's all scaled, so it's dimensionless. We have boundary conditions. The temperature is prescribed. There is no velocity at the boundaries. And the mass current is zero at the boundaries. This is this boundary condition. And if you look at this and you look for a pure conduction state with no convection, you easily find this solution, a linear profile in temperature and concentration. However, this is a completely irrelevant state. You will never see it. The point is this Lewis number is so small. That means the diffusion here is much slower than the diffusion of the temperature. So you will never have this linear concentration profile. You would have to wait for weeks to see a linear concentration profile. And of course, the time scale of your experiments are small.
But for the fluid of magnetic
particles. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a subtle point, I know. Yes, yes. So this is a point we haven't really, we have neglected.
The passive scalar in the fluid, and then you drag along, complete body has its own life, and then it's already not
incompressible. Yeah.
Does that mean the second
factor
is
also incompressible?
Yes, of course. No, concentration
gradient. With magnetic forces or with the temperature gradient, you can change the concentration magnetic particles.
So what's the difference? I don't understand. The whole thing is incompressible.
It turns out that it really doesn't play a role for our problem. But if you look in detail for other problems, it's a point you have really to consider. I know that.
The incompressibility here just considers the fluid.
Yeah.
The fluid. So if you throw a little bit of something in there, it won't change the incompressibility. Even if it's a little bit, it can take up a little beating. Right, because it's fluid, right? It's just a mixture. It's like a fluid mixture right now. It's not a
fluid. The velocity field is.
It's not very much, but I know it's in detail. It's a difficult.
There's
problem.
There's no magnetic forces.
No magnetic field, nothing.
So just the appears. It's like clay. If I would take now a mixture of very small nanoparticles, and then throw them in a liquid, which would just be that thing. They're not magnetic. They would just behave like this.
Yeah. Yeah, at the moment there's no. The only thing we really use is this small Lewis number and the large, the large Sauer effect. Yeah. Yes. Completely. Yeah. Okay. So you don't reach that state where the concentration has a linear profile. So the profile is almost everywhere still constant. The concentration has not time to develop this profile. So except for a small boundary layer, which can be neglected in this case. So we can use as a reference state whose instability we are probing constant concentration. And then we can do the usual linear stability analysis, put the growth rate of the deviations to zero, and we get the threshold. And the threshold we get, it's known for binary mixtures, looks like this one. This is a threshold for if you have a single fluid, and it's decorated with this factor. And you see this psi is very large in this case, so this new threshold is much smaller than the single fluid threshold. However, it turns out you will never see this instability at that threshold simply because the linear growth rates you have at this point here, or a little bit above this point, they are so small, they are again of this time scale, they are so small, you had to wait for weeks to see it. You won't see it. So this is a kind of irrelevant threshold. There is nothing. And the question is, how far do we have to go above this threshold to see really the instability, where are the growth rates in a reasonable range, and where we have where we can really see then the pattern. And so that's why we calculate the linear growth rate as a function of the Rayleigh number, and then of course the saturation amplitude of the roles of the convection pattern. Now, to do that for the linear growth rate, okay, this is the ansatz for a roll pattern with some function for the vertical behavior to satisfy the boundary conditions. The symmetries are okay, and the usual with the usual approach, you can find the growth rates. There is even okay, we only need two modes here, as it turned out, and this sum only the first two are relevant, so we have four modes in total. There is also some approximate analytic solution, which is not really very helpful. It's, so I will go to the numerical results, and they are the following. So this is a linear growth rate. Water. Seven. Yeah. This is a case of a single fluid. This psi equals zero, we would have a single fluid. This is the point where we have the threshold for a single fluid. Though there is zero or negative growth rate here, and here we have a positive growth rate, indicating there is instability. Now, if psi is not zero, you see the true critical Rayleigh number, it lies outside this, on the left, somewhere here. So all this here is unstable. You see you have a positive growth rate, but it's extremely small here if you come into that region. That's why you don't see anything here. You have to come somehow in the region of the old threshold to see the instability. And you see if psi is small, it really looks like the same as you would have a single fluid. It looks like a kind of imperfect bifurcation. And the early experiments, people did somehow wonder where these imperfections came from, and they are clearly due to this binary mixture nature. And you see, if the psi is really large, so here for the ferrofluids, you can see really here it's quite different from the single fluid behavior. And okay, this can also be seen for the saturation amplitude. Here we have a usual ansatz of the same form. These are the fields without convection, and these are the roles here. There are some ansatzes for these functions here. It turns out that one needs for the concentration quite a few modes, 20 or something like that, because of these boundary layers. Here you can still use the one mode description for temperature and velocity. So here the boundary conditions are okay. If you go to the single fluid description, psi equals zero.
L here.
L?
Yeah.
L is a Lewis.
No, I know, but how? I mean, everything you're saying, okay, is a particular range of that.
L is
100?
L is small. 10 to the minus 4.
4.
10 to the minus 4. This is really extremely small, yes. This is a kind of the small parameter we have in the system.
I understand, but I just.
Yeah. Okay, so this somehow, the first part, that's a usual Lorentz model. We need 20 modes here for the boundaries. The K of this role is really not very much changing, though we have usually put it to pi. And we have found no oscillatory instability here, which, okay.
So we need 20 amplitudes for the concentration.
Yeah. This is numerical. This is numerical work. You try 15, you try 20, you try 25, and if nothing changes, you say, okay, 20 are enough. This is all what you can do. Okay, now this is the result for this saturation. Okay, here again is a single fluid behavior, stability here, instability here. The stability point is again very much to the left for this binary mixtures, and you see you have here finite amplitudes. And it really looks like such a...
So I do have to understand this. It's a time-dependent problem, right? So
now this is a saturation amplitudes. You wait until infinity, and then you have the roles developed, and that's the amplitude of.
Does it matter how I turn the thing on? Mm-hmm. The conservation gradients will never build up, right?
Yeah.
No, they will. This is the ones that do build up.
When you say the linear is.
No, this is
the region where the linear instability is visible.
Yeah, yeah. So here.
What if I do an experiment? I can never wait long enough to come. No,
That's okay. If you go to this point where the instability starts, this is this side here. So the instability, the critical rate is here, and there you don't see anything.
Right.
Because the time scale does this. So that you go well into the unstable regime here.
Yes, I understand that.
And then you see a finite amplitude. But it's if you would interpret this as a one fluid, you would still think. Oh, that's the thermal, the usual thermal.
Determined by the thermal diffusion.
Yeah.
Not by the
thermal diffusion. Yeah. Thermal diffusion. Yeah. This is all scaled with.
The real threshold is it minus one?
Yeah. Yes. Almost. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So if you look at this is the time evolution of this amplitude, you see this is all given in thermal diffusion times, and you see this is a case where you are above the single fluid critical value. It's plus epsilon. This dotted line is for psi equals 0. It's a single fluid case. This is for psi, I think, equal 10. And this is something which is below this single fluid threshold. There is for psi equals 0. There is nothing for psi equals 10. Okay, you have this finite amplitude, and you see it's evolving in 20 diffusion times, something like that. And you can compare this time with the linear growth rate, and it really fits together. Okay, and you can also look at this is this boundary layer. This is the boundary layer of the conductive state. And these are the what's coming in addition due to the roles. It's the amplitude is by a factor 10 expanded. So it's.
So can you give me a physical picture of what's happening here? If you are putting in the second phase, and this means that the instability starts to develop before the point at which you put in the third phase.
Yes. Yes.
Why?
Oh, the point is you have two mechanisms for buoyancy. One is from the thermal expansion, and now you have a second buoyancy due to this concentration, the solute buoyancy. And if this psi is positive, they both work together. That lowers you the threshold. That's a basic idea. Okay, so for this part, the summary is there is a forward bifurcation with a very a small threshold. However, you below the usual one fluid threshold, but you only see it if you are somewhere in the range of this old threshold. You wouldn't see it. It's a true threshold, and there are experiments now by Stefan Odenbach in Bremen who seem to really confirm this picture. Now, they try to use tracer particles, which they can detect by a non-optical method. Don't ask me the details what they are doing. It's very complicated, non-optical, because they have this black. Yeah. Okay, now we want to switch on a magnetic field and look how things can be somehow changed with influenced by a magnetic field. So if you have a magnetic field, we have a bunch of new effects. Of course, we have to look at the Maxwell equations and the boundary conditions for the fields. We have this Kelvin force in the Navier-Stokes equation. And we have magnetophoresis. Magnetophoresis simply means that the magnetic susceptibility depends on temperature and concentration. That's the effect. That brings two new coefficients, which describe somehow this dependence. We have also, in principle, a volume expansion due to the field which we have neglected. And in principle, we also have this kind of Hall-like effect. That means that your material properties can now be tensorial. They are no longer isotropic. They can have such a dependence on the magnetic field, which in these fluids, usually nobody thinks about that. That's Righi-Leduc effect I have learned, which is a very obscure stuff. But it's not impossible for these magnetic fluids that you can really have something like that. But we haven't done this here, so. Okay, so these are the new effects we have taken into account. Again, we have a ground state with a almost constant concentration. Because the same thing, the Lewis number is small, the concentration has not time to evolve in a linear profile. And now we look at deviations of this state. So we have a velocity, a temperature deviation, a concentration deviation. And for the fields, we introduce magnetic potentials because the curl of H is zero. And then we get the following set of equations, so I was a little bit lazy. I haven't copied that, and you are not supposed to read this in detail. I only want to make a few comments. The first comment is we have another kind of separation ratio, the magnetic separation ratio psi, which is basically the ratio of these two chi's. These were these coefficients describing the concentration and temperature dependence of the magnetic susceptibility. So there were the expansion coefficients for the usual separation ratio. Here are these coefficients related to the magnetic properties of the system.
How well are these known? These
are not so very well known, yes. They're difficult to So people said they expect it to be in the same range as the psi, and so that's what we have done. You will see, but there are not really numbers known for that. Okay, and then we have five numbers M1 to M5, which are all proportional to the external magnetic field strength to the squared. So this really gives the influence of what is changed if you change the external magnetic field. And of these five, we only want to basically two. One is describes somehow the magnetic force due to this Kelvin force relative to the buoyancy force, and this M2, that's a kind, it's called a magnetophoretic number because here again these chi's are into, which are related to this magnetic phoretic effect. And okay, there's also a point.
There's an argument that the others are what?
There is not really an argument because some of these parameters are not very well known. This M3 is okay. This is a nonlinearity in your susceptibility. That's a 10% effect. This is no big deal. M4, M5, okay, the D4 we have also neglected. So, okay, this is a kind of hand waving. I have no real numbers. I have no hard numbers for that. Okay, the other point I want to make is these are the magnetic boundary condition. This is a boundary condition for the concentration flux. And what you can see is here that the concentration and there is a magnetic degree of freedom, this magnetic potential, are coupled by the boundary conditions. And the effect of that is that you, if you have a concentration boundary layer, you also have now a boundary layer in this magnetic degree of freedom. And okay, these are the approximations. We look for simple roles. Now we have again this multi-mode expansion, and here it turns out we need at least 50 of these modes because the boundary layer is more pronounced and it's more important. What we
temperature
is the fluid? Yes, there is only one temperature in the system. This is, it's really a macroscopic description, you see. It's like the velocities. There's only one velocity. Of course, on a microscopic scale, they can do this, but on a macroscopic scale, we only have one velocity and one temperature. Okay, so we have these 50 modes. Okay, here we have put M2 to 0 at the moment. We have chosen a Rayleigh number which is below the old instability point, and we have now put on the saturation amplitude as a function of the field square, a function of this M1. And you see for small fields, there is no instability. This is a case of a single fluid. Both sides are zero, one fluid, where you have an instability for large fields. And now, if you switch on, okay, this would be only the usual. Yeah. Okay, this is a little bit of.
You're saying that. Can trigger convection in a magnetic
fluid
by just turning on the field.
Not just. So we still have a finite.
You can not just.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So what is that effect?
That effect.
It's an effectively larger temperature.
Yes, yes, that's it. Yes, it comes from the Kelvin force. It comes from the Kelvin force. It's the same one. But this is known also. So that's not new.
Yes,
that in a single fluid. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just that the field gives you effectively a bigger gradient.
Yeah. So without the field, we would be for a single fluid, we would be below. Yes.
But the field basically enhances the
and you,
temperature.
Yeah, and you need to.
What's the direction of the field?
Yes, it's transverse. Yeah, sorry, yes. It's all this direction.
When it puts up a fluid body, the velocity is basically now effectively slower, right? Because it gets pushed faster into the colder region than it would be pushed otherwise.
Well, is it changing gravity or is it changing diffusivity? I think you should be able to analyze.
I'm confused. It's a uniform.
Yes. Yeah, uniform field.
External.
Yeah, but.
Is it changing gravity?
Aren't the particles collected? I mean, the magnetic particles are pulled upwards by the field.
They're backwards.
They're backwards.
It's backwards, so it's not that force.
Yeah.
There's no force.
Yeah, you are looking at instabilities. You are looking at the fluctuations, and then they are, of course, in the conducting state. You have you have the linear profile, the conductor.
Under fluctuations.
You look. This is a concentration. This is a conducting state, and there you have this linear profile in the field. Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah, there is one. Yeah, yeah.
Magnetic field.
There's not in the enclosed field.
Right. This is the local field.
It's a local field. The local field, yeah. The external, this is H0 is a constant, of course, yeah.
And this is. And it's because there's a concentration profile of magnetic particles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's a new Rayleigh number.
Yeah.
There's a magnetic Rayleigh number.
Yeah.
Don't confuse me.
Good number.
I'm trying to
turn through the ratios.
In elementary physics, there's more magnetic particles here than here, so the magnetic field changes. The field locally is because it's screening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this would be for one fluid. If you have only this usual separation number. Without a magnetic, we have here a finite, it's the same story, we have a finite amplitude already here, and this psi m, which we have also chosen it to be 10 here, you see the system, it's enhanced, and it doesn't, I think there is a systematic difference. This guy somehow approaches the single fluid curve, but this seems to stay away from it for. So I don't know what this really means, but okay, there seems to be a special influence of this magnetic separation number. And here dashed lines are our analytic solution, so we were somehow able to do approximate analytical solution for that. That's helpful in this case. I will not show you the details, they are really ugly. The point is you can learn a little bit from the analytical solution. From the numerical solution you have the curves, that's fine, but it's difficult to learn something from that. From the analytical solution you can learn that you really have a boundary layer problem. If you don't take into account the boundary layers, your solutions would be singular. So you really have to have a bulk solution, a boundary layer, and you somehow have to fit them together to avoid unphysical singularities. So you see, in that case, with a magnetic field, the boundary layer problem is really important. And this is due to this coupling of concentration and magnetic degree of freedom at the boundary conditions.
But that wasn't true. In the absence of magnetic
field. Without that magnetic field, we could do an analytical solution completely neglecting so the boundary layer in C. There was no problem, no singularities, nothing.
For the linear instability.
Yeah. Oh, we also did it for the nonlinear thing where we looked at the saturation amplitudes. Yes. There we didn't need it. Here
it's there,
but it's not singular in a sense. So and it doesn't seem to influence the results if you compare it to the numerical ones. Where you can take into account this in the case without a magnetic field, you can really calculate even exactly. There's an exact formula in terms of infinite series. How this profile looks like. So, and for the analytical approximation, it was not necessary to take it to account. Here it was really crucial. And it turned out that here the boundary layer is L to 1/3, which is still small, but it's larger than the case without a field. And okay, this is the analytical formula, and which gives rise to this dashed curve, which is more or less. Okay. There is one peculiar point here, and this is already the last one. I have You see here, you have a denominator of this one-third root. The psi m, the m2 here is negative in how it is defined. So you can see you can get here a kind of singularity. If this m2 approaches this value, the denominator is zero. And this is precisely the thermodynamic stability limit for m2. So that means this M2 is proportional to the magnetic field squared. So in principle, you can make it as large as you want. There is no boundary for that. But thermodynamics tells you you are not allowed to do this beyond this value. That somehow means, I guess, that the description we have somehow breaks down. But
isn't it an expansion in H?
No, it's not really expansion in H. It's
In
some sense, yes. But what can happen is that the other coefficients that are here into this number, material coefficients, that they are all intrinsically magnetic field dependent, and if you have large fields, they also change somehow their values. That's of course possible. Yes. In that sense, yeah, it's an expansion in the field, yeah. And maybe we have overstretched here this expansion, yeah. Okay, this is a result for the boundary layers. This is in the analytical result, our boundary layer was universal. That's kind of because of the approximation we had to make for the, so it didn't depend on these numbers m, the magnetic field and psi. So it was this universal curve, and the numerical curves with m point 1 is b, with m equal to 1 is c. So at least our analytical result shows that the layer depth, this boundary layer depth, is correctly given, and it's proportional to L to 1/3. And this is what I really want to conclude with. The external field makes this imperfectness, what looked like imperfect bifurcation, even more pronounced. The layer profiles are more pronounced and really coupled to the bulk behavior. This is true, I don't know. What we would like to do in the future look is at negative psi. A negative psi means these two buoyancy forces act adversely. That means you have one effect which favors instability, one disfavors. This is a situation where you can expect oscillatory instability. So that would be interesting.
How do you make it negative?
Oh, there are ferrofluids that are.
Which psi?
The usual psi. Not the magnetic psi, the usual psi.
Okay. The magnetic psi is always positive?
Yeah, we think so, but. So as I said,
some ferrofluids positive and some negative. Size?
No, it's not the size. I think I have to look which ones. There are ferrites. There are copper. They have now copper things. So it's really the chemistry. It's not the size. It's a completely different stuff with a different chemistry. Maybe it depends also on the carrier fluid.
It's not the mass of the particle.
No, it's not the mass.
Right? They're all heavy.
Yeah.
So it's
okay, and then the last point is there's a possibility that you can change the role pattern or the pattern from roles to something else as a function of the magnetic field. So here we always have assumed we have roles and put it into the roles, have not looked to other possibilities. So this is something we also want to do. Okay, thank you for your attention.
So the first part of the talk,
yeah,
the experiment that one could do is to put in other particles than magnetite,
yeah,
which are not black, which are perhaps transparent. The scattering is not so much a problem. You might even index match the fluids.
Yeah.
And then you have these particles in there, or it's some kind of, basically it's dirty water.
Yeah, yeah. For that, you right. So, but you really have to find a system that also has a very small Lewis number and a large separation.
I understand. I'm just wondering, yeah. Because I can't remember any paper actually where anybody studied the Relativity stability of dirty water, which is probably the most common Relativity stability that ever happened. Have you seen one?
I've seen this in cocoa.
Or in cocoa, yeah. I mean, really in our convection of cocoa, or something. I don't remember, and I didn't. You see, when this really is important, that we have the separation ratio effect,
yeah,
it might be very different from what you would expect from a normal really in our convection.
Yeah. Yeah, but
it's interesting.
People have looked at.
Have you seen papers? That,
yes, a small amount of impurities, yes. I think that's good.
Well, cocoa is not that small amount, right?
But how can
we say what small means? What does sort of small mean, do you know?
Well, just...
But you don't have to drink your experiment.
No, just that people have asked what will a small amount of impurities mm-hmm. do in experiments, just because yes. they then involve these Soray-driven instabilities. Yeah. Yeah. People are certainly saying,
yeah. Do you know someone else?
Oh, Ginter knows that stuff.
It was before my time.
Maybe.
I must have been.
Yeah, there were a lot of experiments in I think in the 80s on binary mixtures.
Well, binary mixtures, I knew that stuff.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Oh, with
binary mixtures.
In binary mixtures. Yeah.
The appearance of squares.
Yeah.
Was I think there was some appearance of squares, and that was traced back to a small concentration of impurities.
Okay.
Okay. Open curious, not just.
Well, something else.
No, I'm talking about particles. You know, I'm interested in the case where you actually have finite-sized particles. You know, 100 nanometers or larger. Let's say 100 nanometers.
Okay.
In 10. I mean, I'm really talking about particles, not just the molecule. So.
Right.
And so that's an interesting question. Is this? I think it's interesting to see when you go from granular behavior to Lewisian fluid. Right.
Yeah,
the particle is large and large after a while, what you have is really sand. Right? Because there is strong convection. It could be turbulence with sand. Yeah, I don't know what would happen if Günther would put a little bit of Santa Barbara Beach in its turbulence experiment and we'll see what happens then.
Turbulence.
Well,
this is
weak convection, right?
This is convection.
So particles have to be small. So particles have to be small. Now understand.
Yeah, and do you have 100 nanometer particles?
Well, they're making up particles of those sizes, right? I mean,
really?
Monodisperse, I mean, it's no problem.
Okay. There are problems with magnetic particles in
actually,
100
nanometers is easy. That's easy. Part. Smaller is.
With magnetic particles?
No, not magnetic. I'm just talking about.
Okay. Because in this ferrofluid business, I think the for medical applications, it would like to have 100 nanometer particles.
These
guys are a little bit too small for them, and the micrometer are too large, and they would like to have 100 nanometer magnetic particle, and that seems to be very difficult to do. I don't know why, but
100 nanometer. I've seen experiments on ferrofluids where there's just a magnetic field, and then you also get a sort of serpentine pattern, things like that developing. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would think in what you've done, you should get interaction between two different fields. Is that what happened? One of them is a periodic pattern created by the magnetic field alone. No thermal. And then you also have the thermal patterns of the rods and so on. And isn't there an interaction between the two of them?
The first
one is. You just put a ferrofluid into a magnetic field, a vertical magnetic field. And then it separates. It separates into in a larger
field. Oh, large lamina.
Yeah, large field.
So this somewhere must be into your...
Rosenzweig type?
No, Rosenzweig is a free surface. So there are no free surfaces. No.
I'm trying to think of who it was who showed this.
Uh-huh.
Sort of tabletop.
So it's large experiments then. It's large magnetic fields. So you say they clump up, they
yes, contract? Yes, the magnetic field essentially causes them to form domains.
Okay, domains.
And then, as you get into action between both domains.
Yeah, yeah. No, we really have assumed that the particles are still somehow. If you have a your field is too large, they have this chaining or whatever, people do not know, but you have these effects that you have locally inhomogeneities. Right, yes. And then, of course, maybe our simple binary mixture picture is not good enough.
You know, when you say it breaks down for small
fields.
How large
fields
do
you use?
Okay, we are not using. They have not yet done the experiments with a magnetic field. That's what they want to do now, that we have told them it's something interesting to see. This is a prediction, this is prediction. So,
yeah, but part of the answer, 10 Gauss at Tesla, what are we talking about?
The fields usually are not so large for these ferrofluids. You don't need it. It's 100 Gauss, 500 Gauss, and then you're already done with the ferrofluid.
So there are no experiments?
Not yet with a magnetic field, yeah. But I think Odenbach will do it. He has the equipment and he has the field, so. He was waiting for our paper, so.
I mean, they were very experiments. They did convection of
magnetic. He did the convection without a field. Yes.
Without a field.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I think
of course, there's a lot of work in liquid crystals.
Mm-hmm.
In the presence of
a field.
Interest by the lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pattern formation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So isn't that, how is that related?
I don't know. I haven't looked into really in the pattern formation stuff here, so we really have took the simplest role. And that's nothing more.
So you say like double convection in a magnetic liquid crystal within a piping
field. And how
difficult is the elastic question?
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So here you don't have any elastic energy.
When I think we should compare it to the binary mixture experiments.
Yeah. Could I ask sort of Steve's question? If I understand what he's saying, which I this other instability has nothing to do with gravity or anything else. It's put on a magnetic field, and then if you bring the magnetic particles together, the field gets larger, so you get this kind of self-focusing instability or something.
It's a free surface, yeah.
No,
in the bulk. Okay.
Yeah, it's got to happen. I don't know what the threshold is, but surely that must play some role here. And what I'm saying is, you have this magnetic field this way. You've assumed that the concentration of the magnetic particles doesn't depend on this core.
Yes.
But it certainly
only in
the
okay.
Which if you put the concentration ahead of,
he thinks there is also this periodic structure.
This way.
But wasn't it
that's what the roles?
That's what the roles do, right?
Yeah, but so question comes up.
Yeah, if you want to.
That's much stronger.
Stronger, yeah, yeah.
You didn't see it, right? You didn't see that.
This other stuff.
No, this is done by Ansatz. The role Ansatz is.
The concentration is pretty high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And no, I think what he wants to know is how strong that is.
Yeah. Okay, this. If you want to compare two instabilities.
Well, it could be, right?
It could be. I don't know where that instability is. You say it's very high.
Well, but they're the convection rules, right?
Yeah,
and then associated is some periodic variation
right,
of the concentration.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you would need is a plot of that concentration to see how strong that effect is. Because it's there. The question is it a huge effect?
Yeah, because you do have this kind of scale.
Right, it's in Ansatz, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a periodic variation
of
the concentration.
Yeah.
So it's there. It is a periodic variation of the concentration.
But if you want to compare two instabilities, you must an Ansatz which carry both, and then you compare it. If you have only the Ansatz for one, you will never see the other. That's true.
No, I understand. That's when this thing breaks down.
Okay.
Maybe I should talk to you. I'm just confused about, did you solve for H? You had B, you had the external field.
Yeah. This is M1, M2, these are the parameters, and you can change it. They really depend on the field, yes.
But the priority, then wants to know is whether the field is actually also varying.
It is, right? X and Y.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
That's just part of the instability.
Each variable has.
But I don't think that instability he's talking about, some kind of quantum instability, is in here. And I agree that it's not in here, it seems to me that that would be much
higher, I guess, yeah.
I have no feeling for that.
Well, that's what he said, a very strong description agglomeration. I mean, this theory has problem with high.
Yeah, that's true. This chaining or whatever,
something
agglomeration.
This is not chaining. It's talking about non-local quantum. I mean, it's linear as you go. Okay. I've never done calculations. I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is a periodic nonsense.
This is.
I mean, here what you do is you take the whole equation, you allow everything to vary, and make a periodic nonsense and see, right? And then you do the linear stability analysis, and then you put on top some nonlinear. So it should have captured that. I mean, where your nonsense didn't. I mean, as long as you take enough modes, it should be there, right? I
mean, if you've got the right magnetic physics.
Maybe you didn't throw out the wrong terms, right?
Yeah, if you've got the right magnetic physics, if you calculate the local field current, and you said, and you have.
The mathematics is right, then. Interesting. Thank you very much for the talk.